We're going to talk about eternity, but let me start with this. In his book, How to Know a Person, straight to the point, the sociologist, columnist, and political commentator David Brooks gives a powerful critique of 21st century Western life as something which is particularly and peculiarly toxic to our relational development. And he uses what was for me the quite confronting metaphor of the morning school run. I thought that might be appropriate with school coming up this week. He says this: if the primary way you relate to the world is efficiently, then dropping the kids off at school is a task to accomplish as quickly as possible, and you will be a ship passing in the night with the other parents. You have things to accomplish in your day, and there is a limited amount of time to get that done, and this isn't one of those things. But if you relate to the world primarily relationally rather than efficiently, then you will know your neighbours and you will take time to know the stories of the other parents and to interact with them, because this, in fact, is your purpose. Ouch. Boy, did I feel convicted. David Brooks, to my knowledge, is not a Christian author, but as I sat there completely like lanced and convicted by this quote, I couldn't help but think about the life of Jesus. As I read the Gospels, Jesus is a very busy person. Everyone wants a piece of him. But he had time for people. And what David Brooks said here just reminds me of the life of Jesus, because like he doesn't just meet people's needs, but he does so in an unrushed way. It's like he's got all the time in the world in so many of these little conversations. And as I considered the life of Jesus, I was like, why is it that so often our lives look different from his rhythm of life, from the way he engages relationally? And I wonder, as I consider this, if it's because at least one reason might be that there is no human being that has ever existed before or since that has lived with a more profoundly eternal perspective than Jesus. So I want to talk about eternity. Let's take our last breath, if you like, in light of eternity. But let's admit that life has realities. We live in certain realities that intrude into our moments. You know, writing to his friends in the Corinthian church, the Apostle Paul, he writes this to them. He says, therefore, we do not lose heart, though outwardly we are wasting away. That's a nasty reality, isn't it? Physically, we're wasting away. I'm 1 year older as of yesterday. Thank you. Yeah, but, you know, I was talking to my friends last night. You know, the difference is I used to play cricket on the driveway with Josh. I'd bend over and pick up the ball like that, but now I'm like adding in an arm. Like I'm bending down, and like you add this arm brace to help, and I'm like, when did this start happening? Outwardly, we are wasting away. That is a reality. Yet inwardly, we are being renewed day by day. For our light and momentary troubles are achieving for us an eternal glory, says Paul, that far outweighs them all. Of course it does. It's eternal versus temporary. But we'll get into that in a minute. You know, I don't know if you've studied the life of Paul, but he doesn't just kind of float through life unaffected. He's not cruising up in the clouds. He does not live an easy life. And at first glance, these afflictions that he mentions, they are not light and momentary. He goes through some major stuff. But he does acknowledge it. He says, like, these troubles or these light and momentary difficulties, there are realities of the moment. But what is it that makes them light and momentary? That is what I want to spend the rest of our time exploring this morning. But before we jump into it, I want to ground it for us today, because I think this is really important. Let's just pause for a sec and ask ourselves the question. In fact, I want to ask you the question. What is that thing that is happening in your life right now that you just wish was not happening? Have a think about it. Like, what is the reality for you right now that you are facing that is beyond your strength, that is beyond your capacity or ability to solve? What is it? Have a think. Maybe nod your head when you've got it in your mind. I think we've all got something that scares us a little bit. You have it? If so, I want to encourage you this morning. I want to tell you something, and that is this. Whatever that thing is, can be a doorway into an entirely new experience with God. I promise you that it can be. And so sit with that in your mind as we move through the rest of this morning. These things that Paul is talking about in his life, for him, they are light and momentary for two reasons. First of all, they're not wasted. They're not wasted. They are actually contributing to something in the long run. And secondly, his eyes are fixed on a different perspective. So I want to dwell on these two reasons for the rest of our time. But if it's okay, I'm going to go backwards, if that's all right. Let's go backwards. And I'm going to do verse 18 first. So here we go. A different perspective. Verse 18 says this. So we fix our eyes not on what is seen, but on what is unseen, since what is seen is temporary. But what is unseen is eternal. Eternal. A few of you, have asked me this week, how are your holidays? And, we appreciate that. And I thought I'd share some things from our holidays this morning. They were great. And I wanted to share something with you this morning. It turns out that the last few weeks of January, so we're on holidays and chilling out, but of course I'm still watching the news occasionally. There's a bit going on. There's a bit going on in the world. I don't know if you've noticed this in the last few weeks of January. It's been an eventful time in the geopolitical and geoeconomic area of things. Obviously, there's been an enormous course reversal, if you want to call it that, in America, the most powerful nation on earth. And last Saturday, I was reading through some articles. I'd been looking at the news, and that same day we decided to do a family road trip to Yanchep National Park. And we did a tour of the Crystal Cave there. And I got some pictures on the screen here. Anyone been into this Crystal Cave? It's really amazing. The thing I forgot about caves, I actually went to the caves down in Margaret River, but it was when I was a kid, so I didn't appreciate it as much. And I all of a sudden realize that stepping into places like this, it's like stepping into a time machine. Why? Well, each one of those little stalactites that you see suspended from the roof of the cave there, they take 100 years to grow 1 centimeter. 100 years to grow a single centimetre. That's why, the tour guide's always like, when you go, please don't just tink, break them off. Now, just think about that for a second. Now, 2 hours earlier before this cave tour, I had been reading reports about the catastrophic fall of cryptocurrency, a new upcoming AI disruptor, and an upcoming date for a uni assessment. And now I was looking at this little formation that was still quietly growing at about the same time Moses was standing in front of Pharaoh. Gives you a bit of perspective, doesn't it? And I thought to myself, 100 years after I'm dead, this thing will be that much longer. the vastness of time. I had a profound experience of time. Or more accurately, I had a profound experience of just how temporary I was, in a sense. And some of my greatest concerns really are. But I want to tell you, it wasn't depressing, it was actually liberating. It was actually quite liberating. And this formation, or these formations, deep underground, unseen indeed. Suddenly, upon half a moment's consideration given to it, they can give an entire new perspective on how short a lifetime really is and everything therein. And this is just a simple calcium carbonate formation. But let's zoom out to one step more, right? The Bible subject matter is not the time it takes for a stalactite to grow. The Bible's subject matter is an amount of time that all of that is just a blip on the radar. Just a blip. It is a period of time that renders the greatest cave formations on the planet to be a mere blip on the radar. The Bible subject matter is eternity. Do we know that? Eternity and the God therein. And so when things do get overwhelming, perhaps it's time to ask the question, what is the subject matter of my life? Is it me and my own problems, or the eternal God who inhabits it? Do you know, this is the question that transformed a city. Eternity, the question of eternity. Many of you may know this story. Nod your head if you've heard of this guy, the eternity guy. Stace, if you don't know, Arthur Stace. A child born to alcoholic parents and himself an alcoholic since his teenage years. He became an eventual scout for his sister's brothels. And then he became a soldier who was exposed to the horrors of World War I until his eventual medical discharge due to bronchitis and pleurisy. But on the 6th of August 1930, he walks into St. Barnabas's Church in Sydney, and he hears these words. And I've left it in the King James to, because he probably would have been listening to these literal words. From Isaiah 57, verse 15, the preacher was saying, "For thus saith the high and lofty one that inhabiteth eternity, whose name is holy. I dwell in the high and holy place, and with him also that is of a contrite heart and humble spirit, to revive the spirit of the humble and to revive the heart of the contrite ones." And as Stace walked into that church and those words hit his ears, the Lord met him in that moment, and all he could think about was eternity and the God of eternity. And for the next 35 years, or over half a million eternities, he wrote that word over half a million times on walls, streets, sidewalks and buildings in Sydney. And then if you may remember, on the Sydney 2000 closing ceremony of the Olympic Games, what lit up across the Sydney Harbour Bridge? Eternity. Eternity. Written into the history of a city. Eternity. Stace encountered the Lord and eternity became his subject. What's our subject? What's your subject? What is your highest concern this morning? Is it of eternal significance? Paul says these afflictions, they are light and momentary in light of eternity. Why did Jesus have so much time for people? Because whenever he saw someone, he did not see the temporary flesh. He didn't see this stuff. He saw the eternal soul within. He saw an eternal being. And when he looks at you, he sees the opportunity for an eternal relationship. And thirdly, I said we're going to go backwards. So the redemption of things. Paul says, "For our light and momentary troubles," back up in verse 17, "are achieving for us an eternal glory that far outweighs them all." You know, once upon a time, there was a you didn't have cloud saving, like you didn't save things to the cloud, you actually saved stuff to your own hard drive on your own computer. And computers used to crash all the time, especially like the one after Windows XP. I can't remember what it was, but it was a terrible operating system, constantly crashed. And there was a moment where I was kind of like early years of college, I'm working on this assignment and I've been suffering for hours on this thing. And then the computer freezes. You ever had this? Control, out, delete, reboot, all your work, sot lost. I was beside myself. Because it really was suffering. I mean, you know, this is a guy writing theological essays, only just passed by 0.5% year 12 English. I'm serious. It was really hard. And I lost it all. And worse than the kind of, you know, the agony of writing this essay was this sense of like, what a waste. What a waste of time. Could have been doing something else. What a waste of time. You know, there are many people that go through things that are far worse than this. Some people don't just lose a few thousand words. Some people lose their voice, it's taken away from them. Some people don't need to reboot their computer. Some people find themselves in a situation where they have to reboot their lives. Some people have been through that experience. Some of them sit in this church. And nowhere in Scripture is there a promise of avoidance of tough times, but we do have this promise that they will never, ever, ever be wasted. Hallelujah. They will never be wasted when we're walking with the eternal God. They will never, ever be wasted. The promise is hidden in the prior verse from verse 16. If we go back to it, we do not lose heart, though outwardly we are wasting away, yet inwardly we are being renewed day by day. Four very important joining word. NT scholar Phil Hughes puts it this way. The conjunction for shows that what Paul says here explains the prior verse, namely, the astonishing fact that the affliction endured is itself a process by which God bestows a surpassing glory. Think about that. The affliction itself, that thing that scares you, that thing that it's like, this is beyond me, I just can't get past this. When we're walking through it with God, it is God Himself that bestows upon us this surpassing weight of glory, in C.S. Lewis's words. And it is achieved for us. You can't earn it. It does not say we achieve the glory. It is bestowed upon us. So stand fast, take a breath, and watch God transform you eternally. If someone were to ask me, how do I know that I am a disciple? My simple reply is this: can you name your cross? Jesus said in Matthew 16:24, whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. Can you name it? Can you name it? The cross that you have chosen to carry purely for the sake of Jesus. That affliction, that light and momentary trouble, which is light and momentary only in the light of eternity with Him. I say again what I said 20 minutes ago, whatever that thing is, I tell you, is the doorway to a whole new experience of the eternal God. And the greatest glory, friends, that we can experience is to be named as children and friends of God. That is the heaviest weight of the weight of glory. To know God, the real God, the one we've been searching for, and to know Him, not for 100 years, not for 1,000 years, not for 10,000 years, not for 1,000,000 years, but for eternity. Eternity. Forever. What is the subject of your life? Let me finish with this. Wednesday morning, I'm at the gym. on the elliptical trainer and to lessen the suffering of the cardio machines. They obviously put screens in front, like a lot, I guess a lot of gyms do, put like TV screens up. The sound's turned off, of course, but because everyone's got their earphones in anyway. But up on the screen is, I think it's under Sunrise or whatever the morning news channel was. And the headlines are flashing up. You know, they're doing these morning TV shows. And the headline that happened to flash up at this particular morning was this. You ready? Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists. That's apparently a group somewhere, a think tank. 2025 Doomsday Clock Announcement. January 28, 2025. Here's the announcement. Would you like to know what the announcement is? The announcement is this. It is now 89 seconds to midnight on the Doomsday Clock. I don't know if you've seen this on TV during the week. I think it was in the paper as well. And as I said, the sound is turned off on the screen, but, you know, these scientists shuffling around, the body language is deafening. One word, frantic. Frantic. There is a palpable worry. There is an anxiety written over everyone's face as the so-called doomsday clock clicks one more second towards the end of everything. As I'm there huffing and puffing, I thought to myself, what is our announcement to a world like that? Like, what are we saying as a church? What do we say to a world that's hearing that announcement pop up on their screen? You know what? I think it's this. As a people of Christ, we don't have a doomsday clock, we got a new day clock. That's what it is. It's a clock, but it's a new day clock. And it starts now. You don't even have to wait 89 seconds. It starts now for anyone who is willing to trust in the eternal God revealed in Jesus Christ. And that helps me breathe again when I see a headline like that. And finally, guys, Jesus has time for you, as I said, because as C.S. Lewis pointed out in his book, The Weight of Glory, you are an eternal being. I mean, you might be using the extra hand to brace yourself when you pick the ball up, but don't let that fool you. You are an eternal being. What does that eternity look like? You will exist for an eternity somewhere. But here's where I want to finish this morning, guys. So will those around you. Do you see them? Or are we too concerned with the efficiencies of the now to act relationally in the light of eternity? And as we shift our focus to the encounter series that we begin next week, I finish with this. Who are you inviting? Who is your one more? Have a think.